All right, I think we're about ready to resume, turn to a topic that's been mentioned several times already today, and that's the proposed new accounting standards advisory forum. And Yale is going to take us through perhaps an overview of the steps that have preceded to where we are at the moment, and then we'll tee up questions for discussion in our breakout group. So, Yale, over to you.
Thank you, Paul, and good afternoon, everyone. I would like to present you with some of the highlights of this project. We've been working on it since, I think, the beginning of last May. And earlier this month, we finally published the final proposal. In front of you are the key milestones of the project and where we have come so far. We published an invitation to comment on the first proposal. In November, we received 63 comment letters that were very, very detailed and had very diversified views included in it. It was quite a task to try to balance between the different comments made, and we had proposed a revised proposal based on the responses to these comments. These revised proposal was presented to the trustees in their last meeting in Hong Kong. In that same meeting, Paul represented the advisory council, and he presented the results of the survey, and he will present that in detail later. But those comments were also fed back into the final document that was published immediately after the IFRS Foundation Trustees meeting. So that was published in February the 1st, and we called for nominations for the group, and the deadline is this Friday, the 28th of February. I should also comment that in the meantime, and as Makoto mentioned earlier, we also had a discussion with the monitoring board who was involved in the different stages of the process. The monitoring board was presented with the final outcome, and we heard very positive views from the monitoring board, including a very good feedback on the changes that we've introduced into the final proposal. And so now we're facing the final stage in which upon receiving the nominations from the different members and the different nominees, we'll have to make the final recommendation to the trustees and make the group start working. First meeting was scheduled for April 8th and 9th, and as Michelle previously said, these dates are basically needed because of the project of the conceptual framework. We wanted to have ASAF involved in the conceptual framework discussions as early as possible so we can have the feedback as early in the document evolution as possible. So if all goes right, in a little more than a month's time, we will start working with the group. Next slide, please. The size of the group was a very major issue in the consultation process, and the initial proposal remained unchanged, and the group is proposed to include 12 other members. We did say in the feedback statement that we will still retain some flexibility as the process progresses, but the comments, some of which were highly supportive of keeping the size minimal. Some called for enlarging the group. I think that basically we decided to stick to the... Thanks. Thank you. We decided to stick to the original size and, for example, not to take the recommendation of enlarging it to 16, like the board members, because we see a clear difference between ASAF and the ISB. While the ISB is a voting body and some of its members express their views by voting and don't necessarily have to make a full representation of their views, and also it is balanced geographically. The ASAF is a group that is advisory. It expresses its opinion by presenting the views. The views should be diversified and regional, and therefore should be listened carefully. And if we want to have a thorough discussion on technical issues, it was necessary to keep the numbers low. We did say in the terms of reference that there is a flexibility going forward so that the chair of the ISB, the chair of the ASAF, who is the chair of the ISB, may invite particular national standard setters or regional bodies to participate in particular discussions when their input is important or material. But as the main goal of the group is to actually deliberate very thoroughly on professional technical issues, the number should be kept in a way that the group can work together and come up with very in-depth, detailed deliberations. The geographical balance is presented to you. Also, it remained unchanged. Many people, some comments were made on the two seats of the world at large. There was some questions about what is the process of deciding these two seats and whether they are at all needed. Some even recommended to eliminate these two seats. We think that these two seats are important to retain flexibility and to retain some balance between the different members and different regions. But the whole structure, including size and composition, is part of the issues that will be examined after the 2 years period that is set for reassessing whether the proposal is working and what should be changed. So while we have made some determined decisions, we're still open to changes in the future as the work of the group will be more clear. The memorandum of understanding was the key area where we made, I would say, material changes compared to the original proposal. The first commitment that we put very clearly in the proposal was that the members should subscribe to the supporting the mission of creating a single set of global standards. And we got quite a lot of pushback on that commitment. Many commentators had the view that it might restrict the participation of very important and very relevant members to the group, and therefore we changed this commitment, and rather than having a direct support on the mission to develop a single set of global standards, it is support the IFRS Foundation in its mission. So it's a slight tweak, but I think it's a very material one because it enables jurisdictions that have not made the internal decision to adopt IFRS to be members of the group if they can contribute to the technical discussions of the group. And I think it still keeps the goal of the group in place, that is to work together to develop a single set of global standards, but it made it easy for some members to be part of this group. The other changes that we made that were very important is that we dropped two proposed commitments that were included in the first draft. It was supporting the consistent applications of the standards and making best efforts to promote the endorsement or the adoption of IFRS's in full and without modification in the relevant jurisdictions. After reading the comments, it was clear to us that that will also create problems for some of the potential candidates to first legally subscribe to a commitment that they don't have any legal authority on within their jurisdictions. And also, we decided that it actually would be very good to clarify that the main purpose of this group is to focus on standard setting process as it is and leave implementation and endorsement and adoption issues to other relevant authorities. So we now focus on regionally representative representative technical input and not application or endorsement or adoption of the standards. A very important component in the MOU is a mutual commitment of both sides to respect independence of the standard setters and the ISB, so the members respect the ISB's final discretion in making the final decisions on the standards, and the ISB on its side respects the legal mandates, the legal authorities, and the general legal limitations and powers that the members have, and that should not be a hurdle or a problem in communicating through ASAF. But it should be clear that that we're working constructively within these boundaries. And finally, many commentators, and I think rightly so, were concerned that it was the initial proposal was too one-sided, and now the commitments are mutual. ASAF members take responsibility, but the ISB as well, to be transparent, to effectively communicate the materials, and to effectively represent and faithfully represent the views that ASAF members are presenting to the board, and to feed that into the standard setting process and deliberation. Some of the comments focused on the fact that we might have not been very clear about the membership criteria, so we made that quite clear in the call for nominations. We focused on two necessary requirements, which are the technical competence, experience, and knowledge on financial reporting issues. So here we cannot compromise on the quality of the discussion and on the quality of the members participating in the discussion, and this is a key issue. So experience in standard setting and good knowledge of the standard setting issues and technical ability to discuss them in a very thorough manner is a key requirement of the candidates, both on the organizational level and I think on the personal level. Now I say that with a caveat, because the candidates are made in an organizational level. We did not ask for nominations on the personal level, but yet I think it will be quite it's quite obvious from our expectations that organizations should send capable people that are able to participate in such discussions. And then the second requirement is, of course, having the resources and the ability and the expertise to participate, including travel expenses and the such. So it has to be a participation backed by an organization that can actually support the numerous meetings that will be convened each year, and a very extensive discussion, so preparing papers, being able to make some research when needed. All that is part of the requirements in participating in the group. Having said that, we still thought that other factors are very important in the support of the nomination. They're not requirements that are part of the material candidacy, but it's certainly something that we will look at in the nomination process and in the decision, and that include, of course, knowledge and experience in IFRS, contribution to IFRS Foundation and the ISB's activities, the scale of the capital market involved, and the way that the member will be able to represent other input from the region. So not only jurisdictions, the specific jurisdictions, but maybe other jurisdictions when this is relevant, of course. Comments were very interested to understand what would be the process, and again, we try to make that very, very clear in the final documents. So we made a call for nominations paper in which we specified how we will make that decision, so that the candidates will present in their nomination document how they meet the membership criteria and the factors mentioned, and then this will be formally consulted with the relevant bodies, those bodies that you see in front of you. And finally, the decision will be by the IFRS Foundation trustees following the advice of the ISB. The advice of the ISB, of course, is crucial because the ISB is the body that needs the consultation. So the view of the ISB chair and vice chair on this would be material. But the final decision, as I said, would be made by the trustees of the foundation. And finally, and this would be the, I guess, one of the issues or one, the key issue that will be discussed today is the relationship with between the ASAF and the Advisory Council. A number of comments were focused on that, including the comments that came from the Advisory Council itself. And definitely we are having here two advisory bodies that provide advice, but we think that the advice is of very different nature. And while the purpose of ACE, in generally speaking, and this is not to limit the discussion that will occur today, but generally speaking, when we thought about this proposal, we saw the ASAF as a technical advice on standard setting process in detail, whereas the Advisory Council plays much more of a strategic goal, but all these I think we will elaborate more later. We try to be very specific or as specific as possible in the way we defined the role of ASAF, and that appears in the MOU and the terms of reference. So the role is to support the foundation in its developing of the IFRS as a single set of global standards, to formalize our relationship with the ISBs, our relationship with the different standard setters, and to create a multilateral group of discussion, and to facilitate effective technical discussion on standard setting issues. And we hope that by that it will clarify, but obviously I think there are some open questions and they will be discussed today. We plan to, as I said, review the future membership of ASAF and of Advisory Council, of course, with the leadership of Paul, and to understand whether there are steps that need to be taken in order to clarify the different roles of the two groups. And at this point, I think I will pass it to Paul to complete the presentation.
Thank you, Yael. Before moving into my piece, and bearing in mind we're going to break out into sessions to discuss these points in detail, but are there any points of clarification that you would like to put to Yael in terms of her presentation? Jim.
Yael, on slide number 5, you had reference to the contribution that ASAF members make to the IFRS Foundation and IASB. Can you tell me what you mean by contribution?
It's not financial contribution.
Very good.
Important clarification. It's financial and other.
It really helps.
All right, then. Let me turn to my brief piece on this, which is falls into the category of better late than never. You may recall at our last meeting, Hans gave us an overview of the proposals as they then stood relative to the formation of ASAF, but the paper had not yet been published. So we were invited to give initial reactions. I think it was a good initial reaction, which I reported in my written report to both the board and the trustees. It was only a few weeks later that the light bulb came on, and I said, why don't we use our technology to explore further the views of council members in light of having read the discussion paper and having had time to reflect and consult, whatever. So in consultation with Charles and Christoph, we thought that a useful thing to do, and Yael was involved in that discussion. Unfortunately, if we had done that a few weeks earlier, we would have had a much higher response level that came out shortly before the holiday season. The timing really could not have been worse. Secondly, technology, the usual gremlins crept in. So I want to apologize if some of you were not aware of the survey. That was not the intended result. We're not getting into a selective polling of more enlightened members. It was more a question of whether or not the email alerts happened to get through to you. Notwithstanding both of those things, I was very pleased that we had a high level of response. I'm not sure whether at least 27, possibly more. One point that I made to the trustees is the benefit of the broad constitution of this council, I think, pays off in exercises like this. When I sort of looked at our responses and said, where did they come from in terms of users, preparers, auditors, standard setters, my sense was it was a broader range of responses, whereas the comment letters that came to the trustees, on my take of it, were somewhat more clustered around one or two important perspectives. Likewise, from a geographic point of view, we got a fairly broad range. If you're wondering what global organizations is about, they're ones with, and this is me, this is my personal pigeonholing scheme, but for a number of organizations, I think where you happen to be located is of a secondary consideration. You represent global networks, and so that's where you find yourself. But we got a range of responses. There was some overlap, but not a whole lot. So by my count, there were six, maybe seven members of council who either themselves or their organizations had also submitted a letter to the trustees. But there were at least 20, I think, points of view that had not been captured in the letters that went to the trustees directly. So I found that useful. My sense of the comments and concerns that we raised when I looked at the very extensive staff analysis that was done of the comment letters the trustees had received, very high level of similarity on a number of points. In terms of our responses, I think Michelle said earlier today, unanimous support for the initiative, recognizing there were important details to sort out as to just exactly what this initiative should or should not encompass. Most members putting down a strong marker that the focus, as we understood the proposal around ASAF, was on major technical issues, taking advantage of their closer connections to their jurisdictions and regional perspectives as a useful source of issues coming up through the trenches, if you will, in their jurisdictions. One of the biggest areas of concern that we had was the one that Yale alluded to. Many respondents expressing misgivings around some of the commitments that were being asked of members, the worry being that it was either going to exclude important perspectives or there might be legal awkwardness in terms of subscribing to them. My sense is that the changes that Yale referred to just a few moments ago, my take is that they respond pretty much fully to the sorts of issues and concerns that many council members had expressed. Likewise, many people observed it seemed to be a one-sided deal. There was quite a bit of discussion around what ASAF members would commit to. But I think there was an assumption that the corresponding commitments of the ISB were understood, but many council members saying that should be explicit. And that's been done, I think, Yale, in a way that now the document does set out explicitly some very important commitments that the ISB makes to this arrangement so that both sides are reflected in the proposal. More consistent, I think, with what many council members were talking about. It should be more of a partnership arrangement. And that sense of partnership didn't come through in the initial drafting, perhaps as clearly as some might like to have seen. be questioned around size. I'm glad I don't have to make this decision. But there did seem to be a majority view amongst council members that the proposed size was roughly right. I think a number of council members said they would not fall on their sword to keep it at 12 and no more. Some saw a bit of flexibility to go a titch larger. One or two wondered what the at-large membership was all about. So it seemed to be that the consensus view seemed to be something in the range of 10 to 16 members was about right. In terms of eligibility criteria for potential members of ASAF, several council members thought that there should be some acknowledgement that the use of IFRS is a relevant consideration. Now, there were some who went even further and said, you know, that was an essential attribute of all members. That was not the majority view, but a number of council members said they thought there should be some explicit consideration of to make sure that there were people at the table who were actually using the standards, not just viewing it as an academic exercise. Several council members worrying that the that resource constraints might be problematic for people who would have useful views. Emerging economies was cited as an instance where perhaps they might want to participate but might simply find that the funding, financial and human resources required to do it might be a bar to them. And there was a suggestion by several council members that perhaps a factor to consider should be, is there a voice at the table that is sensitive to emerging economies, issues, SME issues, whatever. I don't think that's explicit, Yale, in the criteria as they're currently articulated. I don't know whether that's just something that will float around in the background or whether we simply think the odds are pretty high that if you're going to have 12 members that some of them are actually going to be from jurisdictions that are using IFRS as issued by the ISB. There was a suggestion that not many respondents disagreed with the geographic balance, but a number of us just questioned, yes, there are numbers there and there is a degree of balance, but a number of people saying it would be nice to have an understanding of why that mix was being proposed, and that if that were done, it would add some credibility to the structure, but there was also strong support amongst council members for the proposition that the composition of this group should be reviewed periodically. Every 2 years, I think, is the proposal, and if you had that sort of a rationale for the geographic composition as well as the size, it would provide a benchmark that would then be helpful when those reviews were being done. But that we did support that there should be a periodic review, both in terms of size and allocation. So, these views, I captured. The trustees kindly invited me to join them for the discussion of this item. I was given ample airtime to try and convey neutrally, as I understood the preponderance of views coming from the council members. Jan has put together a more detailed analysis of the responses, and maybe now would be a good opportunity if you wanted to make a few comments, Jan, on that summary.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. You have before you Agenda Paper 2A, which is a summary of the results of this survey. The survey had seven questions, which members had the opportunity to respond with either yes, but with... yes, but with reservations and no. And... Most of the members that responded to the survey responded to all of the questions. What is maybe most relevant to us here today, as we go into the breakout sessions later, is the response to the last question on the effects of the formation of this forum on the role and composition of the IFRS Advisory Council. That is in paragraphs 29 and 30 on pages 16 to 18 of the agenda paper. Like Paul said, there was a little bit unfortunate that at the time of when we sent out the survey, we had just upgraded our website, and it seems that there were 8 council members that did not receive any announcements on the survey and did therefore not have the opportunity to respond to it. But two members responded when we were notified that they had not received the survey initially. And like I say, I would like to apologize for that, and we have tried to rectify that, and I think that our announcement system or alerts are working properly today. We have, for example, when the council did its performance self-review, then we posted on the private website a total list of all the comments received in that review. We edited them so that members could remain anonymous in that comments, and it is a question whether the council would like the full list of comments to be posted on the council's private website.
Sorry, I thought that had gone out to all members, is that?
No, not the full comment list. I mean, in the agenda paper includes a selection of the comments, not the full comment list.
Well, let's start with that. Would members like to have that posted on our private website? It's there for your reference. You can read it if you're so inclined. Jim?
It seems to me like it's a done deal, and I don't see why we should spend time asking the staff to post it anyway.
Well, if nothing else, we try to keep an archive of material that we've generated. So my suggestion would be let's put it in the archive. I don't think there's any significant effort involved in that.
No, we have a total list of the comments.
All right. Any comments or questions of a general nature relating to what you've heard so far? Anne?
Mine's exceptionally general as a question. With respect, I haven't seen the ISB set up a body quite so fast. And I congratulate them, but I also wonder why, that's all. Is there some driver behind this other than just the immediate reaction, the immediate need at the ISB?
Who's going to... Yes, the reason why we have proceeded very quickly, it is quick, but I think it's still being done with a lot of consideration, is that we want to have ASAF available as soon as possible to discuss our work on the conceptual framework with. And since we don't have other bodies to take care of that, the reason why we are a bit more hasty than normal. But again, I don't think the haste has damaged the quality of the considerations.
Press pause.
Thank you, Paul. Just a comment, in fact, to flag the quality of the discussions that have been held at the SME implementation group the other day, early February, and said that to me this meeting featured, in fact, the type of discussion and the quality of the discussion we would have at the ASAF.
Well, that's encouraging. Tommaso.
No, thank you. I will have some questions, but I will start from the survey. One of the interesting things in the survey is that many participants thought that 12 is not the right number of members for the ASF, and that they would have they would prefer to have more members. And this is, I think, also was also written in the letter we sent, in which we said that with 12 members, that there is a risk to leave out important national standard setters from ASF. So, on balance, I think that probably there's a need to have more than 12 members. Then I have some questions. What about the memorandum of understanding that the foundation currently has with relevant jurisdictions? Are you going to withdraw, to eliminate, or this memorandum of understanding, or still there? Then another question is whether you see, if from your point of view, the Advisory Council should have a more strategic role rather than the technical role of the ASF. So if you confirm this is the point of view.
Tommaso, I would invite, I don't know, Michelle or Hans, someone going to respond to the size issue. On your second question, I think it's going to be canvassed in the breakout groups in terms of what our role is. So if you would reserve judgment, and maybe if you're not satisfied when we hear the report backs, we can come back to it. Is that fair?
I'll ask on I'll answer the last question. I guess Hans will better respond the two first ones. It's clearly a technical working body. This was clear from the inception. So the question of the existing MOUs, I don't know how Hans looks at
it. Yeah, I'm very much tempted to keep them, if only because in the existing MOU with the FASB, it still says very clearly we jointly strive for a single set of global standards. I can't believe we have sunk so low that this is a matter that people are getting upset about. So, good question. Let me think about it. Question about the size. Well, it is not even that simple to fill with competent technical bodies a group of 12. And where, for example, in Europe, there are still some national standard setters. There are a lot of countries that do not have a standard setter, and that would find it strange if all the seats were taken by a couple of countries that do still have a standard setting ability. But generally, it is not people or organizations with standard setting experience and expertise are not very plentiful around the world. So, we in practice already find it, it can be done to fill the 12 slots, but it is already a challenge. So for both the reason of keeping it limited so that we can have proper technical discussions and the fact that it's not so easy to fill all these slots, I think 12 is still it was a bit of a guess, but it was an appropriate guess, I think.
Well, I see a number of cards up. I think, Panagiotis, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very briefly, we broadly agree, and it's a good initiative. We can understand also all the reasons mentioned by Hans and also the need for supporting the ISB. However, reading Jon's paper, I have one question. Sorry for my ignorance if I'm missing something, but I don't understand how you relate the ASAF with the decision on the composition of this advisory council. It's difficult to understand why this technical body that will support the IASB will, or possibly, it has been raised as a question, may have to decide on the composition of this council. Thank you.
Well, you're ahead of me. I was going to suggest when we move to the breakout sessions that we actually not address the question of the composition of the council. And as I had indicated earlier this morning, I think tomorrow I'm going to see whether council members would like to entertain a broader exercise, because ASAF is just one of many things that might affect views on the composition of the council. And so I think your point's well taken, that we're not in a position today, I think, to have a meaningful discussion of the membership of the council. So I'm not sure I've got the sequence right, but I'll go down the table. Bruce?
Thanks. One of the things I wanted to ask about in terms of the composition was that there's a huge focus at the moment on the geographical reasons, where people are, and I can accept that, but my concern is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of talk about the backgrounds of these people, other than that they are technically competent. Now, it would be a great committee to have, but could be stunted, for example, if we get 11 auditors or 11 analysts or 11 users. You know, is there any requirements for a mix in terms of the backgrounds of the people, similar to what there is on the board level, or is it purely just going to be around the organizations and where they're from?
I suppose that ideally they would all be standard setters. If that were the case, then there would be no problem, even though they were all had the same profession. Obviously, if we have 12 auditors sitting in the room, we would have a problem. But that will not happen. So I would expect the majority of the members to be a standard setter, but perhaps not all parts of the world are able to generate that and might come up with some other sort of solution. But we have no reason to be worried about a lopsided composition one way or another of this board. But we'll keep it in mind.
Begonia. Your mic.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make a comment on the size, or on this, in particular on the number of seats for Europe. Well, I understand that the aim is to keep a balance, a geographical balance between different parts in the world, but I wonder if this is the best or the only criteria to consider. If we think about the use of IFRSs in the world, some recent information and recent report from the SEC mentions that about 80% of the big companies that use IFRS come from Europe. Therefore, more of the problems related with the application, technical issues, appear there. And I am not completely sure that having the same representation as some other parts of the world where the use of IFRS is lower makes much sense. I have the impression that nowadays there is more the idea of engaging new countries in the use of IFRS more than being worried about those that are currently using IFRS and have the big problems in applications. And we have to remember that Europe, is a unity, but at the same time, each country has its own particularities and its own problems in applying IFRSs. So that's my question. Thank you.
Well, if we look at the composition as we had foreseen it, we haven't made a final decision yet, but I would not be surprised that, as you know, we have two world at large. I would not be surprised if at least one of them came to Europe, because there are also non-EU European countries, and it might very well be that one of these seats went to a non-EU country. Then Europe would have four seats. If you compare that to the Americas, that is not one continent, those are two continents, they get three seats. In North America, there are only three countries, two of which apply IFRS, and one of them allows it for foreign companies, registrants. And then we have Latin America, which all of those countries, in one way or another, use IFRS. Then if you look at three seats for these two continents relative to four seats for Europe, I don't think that is an unbalance to the disfavor of Europe. I think it gives a lot of opportunity for Europe to have its voice heard. Also because one of the participants will probably be EFREC, which has representatives from many countries as well.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the change in the commitment language. I think that's a movement in the right direction. I guess my question is, if the main purpose is to gather technical experts from around the world and provide technical input into the process, what was the original thinking as to why any type of commitment was relevant or important to the selection process? Thank you.
If only, why did the FASB and the IASB have this joint commitment for a single set of global standards? Because we were undertaking a huge effort with each other, which was the Convergence Project, which absorbed a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of resources, and that needed a firm commitment. And we don't want people at the table who just think that IFRS is academically interesting. No, we want people at the table who think IFRS is a good thing for the world. So I really don't understand why this should be an issue. Yes, Yael?
One of the most important components of the MOU is the issue of independence and respecting the independence of each other. And I think a creation of such body may have caused different expectations or interpretations as to what is the role of this group, whether it has a veto power over the IASB and the such. I think it was very clear to us from the beginning that the commitments make a very clear transparency to the members and to the outside constituents as to what is the precise role of the group. And I think that was actually quite accepted by most of the comment letters that we received.
And although it is just an advisory body, I would like it to be a body whose opinions we really take seriously. And I think to be part of this body that we are about to take very seriously, we should understand that people participating, institutions participating in that body, do have a commitment one way or another to IFRS. Otherwise, what reason do they have to be there?
Jim.
Thank you very much. I'm a big supporter, and I'm trying to help our conversations later on. Have you made any thoughts or made any decisions about the other mechanisms that already exist, like the World Standard Setters meeting and so on? Do you see that all of the existing activities that you take would continue, and this is an add-on, or have you made no decision yet?
There's one thing that will disappear, and those are the current bilateral relationships, such as we have with IFREC and with the Americans and with the Japanese. So those will go away. I think we will always need world standard setters, because there are a lot of countries in there, a lot of jurisdictions that have no other platform, and they need, I must say, I found the last world standard setters meeting here in London a really good meeting. So we will continue to need that. IFAS has said we want to continue existing to support. IFAS is not an ISB body, so we an IFRS foundation body. We have nothing to say about it. And it has said of itself, we want to stay there because we want to support our members that are a member of ASEF. I think IFAS and the ASEF members will still have to figure out in the future how they're going to do that, whether that needs to be done with the same intensity of the IFES meetings as such currently is the place, but that is really the responsibility of IFES itself. So the only rationalization in the short run that takes place is the replacement of the bilateral relationships with IFES, and indeed there needs to be a discussion about what are the consequences for this body as it sits here. Perhaps not none at all, but that needs to be discussed, and that's going to take place this afternoon.
Julie, sorry, I skipped over you.
That's okay. Just a question, and maybe this is a nit, but it seems like a prime candidate in terms of personal characteristics who could meet the requirements is a former ISB board member, right? My term is up, and I retire to the ASIF, so I just wondered if you thought about whether that was going to be off limits or not.
Have particular ones in mind?
Well, that could not happen à titre personnel. I see no immediate conflict, although, you know, if you have recently been working on standards, it's not immediately obvious that this would happen. I haven't thought about it. But I don't see an immediate conflict of interest there, but if this will happen in practice... Certainly, this person would have to become a member of another body. And, I think my predecessor has become chair of, not of a standard setting body, but, but in that respect, he couldn't be a member. No, I think we are safe. I don't think he can become a member of
I think you'd better put an absolute bar.
In a country maybe that doesn't have another, I think, yeah, it'd be uncommon, the person would go to national standard setter and then boomerang back, if you will. But some countries don't have national standard setters. So if you're short in your country, you know, a former board member may be your best relative to criteria, may certainly be a best option. I'm not suggesting a bright line one way or the other, just a thought to think about. Because if the goal is broader input, you know, all due respect to the individual, you're going to get more
of the
input
same.
You're familiar with if it's somebody's recycling through than somebody new. But by the same token, you know, you want the right level of technical expertise at the table as well. So I'm not suggesting a bright line, but just something to think about.
We at ISB are no great enthusiasts of recycling anyway.
And you don't want this to be board members' pension plan.
All right. Well, seeing no other cards up, I think that is an excellent briefing to move into really the heart of the matter, which is to get our views on several aspects. We had initially suggested four questions. I really think the one dealing with the effect on our composition is best held for another day. The other three, though, the first is, are we comfortable with our mandate as we currently understand it? And I've always operated on the basis that silence, by and large, means consent. I've not heard suggestions for significant change from how we have evolved, bearing in mind that it's taken us more than 10 years to get to our current formulation as an advisory council. So it took time and experience and considerable effort to refine our mandate. But that's really what the first question was trying to get at, is are we reasonably content with our mandate? Second question, and you might argue that we're meddling in other people's business, but we've done that before, so why hesitate now, which is are you satisfied that there is a clear and workable distinction between our role and that of the proposed ASAF, and I think I can take proposed out of it. There will be an ASAF. What I've sensed from many people, including the survey responses and discussions, is a shared desire not to have duplication of effort, not to be tripping over ourselves, and if possible, not just stacking layer on layer of things that are worth doing. So that second question, I think, is perhaps in my mind the most important, to get our ideas as to how the mandate of the role of the ASAF can be articulated in a way that is compatible with ours and so that we are mutually supportive. The third question is really relates to the interaction of the two groups. Assuming, as Hans said earlier, you know, ASAF is going to be up and running in early April. What implications are there for us and for ASAF on an ongoing basis? Should there be some sort of liaison? I certainly don't want to go to all their meetings. If any of you do, be my guest. But it's meant to get at whether there are things that we could do better or differently that would enhance our performance and guard against the risk that we are duplicating effort and potentially sending very conflicting signals to the ISB. So those were the three main points for discussion. We have ample time, but let's not squander it. We usually find about an hour and a half is what it takes for breakouts. That includes tea, coffee, and nature breaks. So if we can manage to be back, the clock here, and I must say I like the bigger clock, it's 2 o'clock, so let's aim to be back at 3:30. Jim, did you have a point before
point of clarification to the chairman, if I may. Do you visualize that the meetings of AFAS will be private or public? Okay.
Jim, and I think that includes all of the agenda papers and the whole yeah. 9 yards. So anyone who wants to follow all of the details, my understanding is, will have a reasonable opportunity to do so.
It's one of our commitments in the MOU.
Now, in terms of breakout locations, Jan, we have 2 in this. Do you want to tell us where to go?
Yeah, I mean, we will. We have 2 breakout rooms out in the lobby, and we'll have to have 2 groups here in this big room, so they would have to be in each corner, I think.
Maybe to shorten the time that people find the groups in this room, if you say group 2 meet in this corner and group 4 over there, I think that's easier than everyone walking around, where do I need to go? So 2 here, 4 over there.
All right, well then, this part is adjourned.